Well, consider this for a moment. The moment you check your phone in the morning, you are giving away your data. Before you've even switched off your alarm clock, a whole host of organisations have been alerted to when you woke up, where you slept, and with who. Our phones, our TVs, and even our washing machines are spies in our own homes. You may think it's science fiction, but it's absolutely not. Privacy is Power is the name of a new book by Carissa Velleth, and she joins us now to talk about it. Morning, Carissa.
Good morning.
Wow, what an opening statement that was. That's not enough to scare anybody into listening to this interview. Then nothing will be, I guess.
I guess so.
So tell me a little bit about you. You are a kind of privacy advocate, but you are a professor at the Institute for Ethics in AI at Oxford University. So that's obviously the premise on which you wrote this book.
Yeah, that's correct. But I actually got interested in privacy because I was studying my Spanish heritage in the archives in Spain, and I learned so much about my family that they hadn't told me, and that led me to wonder whether I had a right to know those things. And that same summer, Snowden came up with his revelations. Being a philosopher, I turned to philosophy for some answers, and I was very unsatisfied with what I found. So I ended up writing my dissertation on the ethics and politics of privacy at Oxford.
How interesting. So we have Spain to thank then for your investigation.
Exactly. My grandparents.
Fantastic. Now, that stuff that I talked about there, I'm a pretty tech-savvy person, and I'm kind of on top of all this kind of stuff, and it scares me the more I know about it and the more I find out about it. But for the average consumer, they really aren't aware, and that's not a criticism, it's fact, of what really is going on around us when it comes to our data and our privacy.
That's right, and it's really not a criticism. It's not a coincidence that they're not aware. These companies don't want to be aware, and they go through a lot of trouble to make all this data collection very invisible, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. The kind of thing that I've found out in my research has really alarmed me, and that's why I wrote this book, because I think there is a sense of urgency that we need to fix the internet now before it's too late.
It's interesting that you're positive about it. I would have thought that the horse has already bolted, so the stable door can't now be closed. But you think you can put the genie back in the bottle even now?
I think it could go both ways. We're at a crossroads. We're still in time for two reasons. One, data can be deleted. And second, much of the world is still not digitized. We're going that way very fast, but we still have time. So I'm hoping we can react in time like we did with the ozone layer, for instance, and how we managed to recover that when it all seemed almost lost.
I guess the big question is, why are they collecting the data? And of course, the answer to that must be money.
Yes, follow the money. Always follow the money. But it's an interesting story because it's not just about money. It's about power. Personal data is power. And for instance, Google and Facebook technically don't sell your data. It's too valuable for them to give it away. They want to keep it. And what they sell is the opportunity to influence you, to predict your behavior and influence you, to access your life through your data. So really, it's a matter of power. And then, of course, power can get you money and can get you many other things. But really, we should think about personal data as power and think that every time you give out your personal data to somebody, you're giving those companies and those governments power over you.
Yes, and I guess it's all too easy to just ignore the terms and conditions and just click OK at the bottom of the tick box when you get to the end.
Yeah, that's right. And they make it so. I mean, and in fact, terms and conditions are made to protect companies. They're not made to protect us. And they're not made to inform us. And that doesn't count as informed consent. So it's very important to resist at every turn that we can, to choose privacy-friendly alternatives. So instead of Google search, use DuckDuckGo. Instead of Messenger, use Signal. Instead of Gmail, use ProtonMail. To click no every time that you get asked cookies. But you don't have to be perfect. Nobody, even if you tried your best to protect your privacy, you will fail. But that doesn't matter that much. What matters is that you may succeed in certain occasions, and that in itself might save you from something like identity theft, but also that you're making a stand, and you're saying, I'm not consenting to this collection of data, I'm not happy with this. And there are two reasons why you should do that. One is that companies and governments are really listening. You'll be surprised to what extent they monitor people's sentiments about privacy and they're worried about that. And secondly, even if they don't care about it, it creates a paper trail for regulators. So when regulators look at a company and the company says, hey, yeah, we're collecting all this data, but our customers are totally consenting, if they see resistance from customers, like asking them to delete your data or saying no to cookies, then that counts as evidence for why that consent is not really freely given.
It's interesting how many people give away their data without even a second thought. And I'm talking about the kind of things where, for example, on Facebook, I'm kind of fed up telling my friends and colleagues now about these kind of things. But when you get those kind of stupid quizzes, you know, like how much like a horse are you? And you answer all these questions, you're basically giving away your data. And most of the time that data is actually stuff that, for example, could be your bank data answers. If they ask you, you know, to answer your favourite place or your first car or your first job, people happily give that data out to find out whether they look like a horse or not.
That's absolutely true. And in fact, that's exactly what Cambridge Analytica used to collect the data. They have those kinds of surveys of, you know, what cartoon are you most like and things like that. And it just doesn't cross our mind. We don't have that kind of Machiavellian thinking,
yes,
that these companies have to imagine how that data could be used against them. That's saying that might end up in you getting denied a loan or a job or getting your identity stolen or money stolen. You just can't imagine that. So, you know, if you're fed up telling your friends, just give them my book and I'll scare them out of their
head. Absolutely, absolutely right. Years ago, I mean, talking like 15 years ago, I, for some unknown reason only to me, decided to actually put my address into a search engine, and I was horrified to discover that my address came up on some really dodgy foreign website, which was effectively selling credit card details, and they somehow had compromised my credit card, and you could basically buy the person's details, and something as innocuous as your address can be the start of a whole data theft of your whole identity.
That's right. That's a huge business and growing. In fact, in a survey that I did with a colleague called Sean Brooke, we found that about 92% of people have had some kind of bad experience related to privacy online. And many times it's getting your credit card stolen, the credit card number stolen, or having your address be for sale. And it's really dangerous also. If you're a woman and you have an ex-partner who is abusive,
yeah,
this can cost you your life and your security. Serious.
Yeah. There was a lot of talk last year of GDPR, and this was going to be the new great white hope to protect all our data. How did that work out, and how is it working out?
It's very unsatisfying. However, I don't want to criticize it because I think it was an amazing victory. 5 years before the GDPR, or even 3 years before the GDPR, nobody thought it was remotely possible to have such a law. And people laughed at the people who were trying to get this passed.
Yeah.
So, you know, they did what was possible at that time. Now we realize they were right. This thing is really serious. It's stupid to have a data economy. It's dangerous. We need to end it. And to end it, we need much more regulation.
Yes.
So the default shouldn't be data collection. The default should be no data collection. And you would have to opt in for data collection. We should have fiduciary duties such that our data can only be used in our interest and never against us. So just like your doctor has fiduciary duties towards you as a patient to always benefit you first and not, for instance, perform a surgery on you because they want to practice their skills or they want to earn more money or whatever it is. In the same way, anyone who has our data should have duties that data has to benefit us first and foremost.
Yes.
And I think we should do, but personal data is kind of toxic asset, and it's poisoning individuals by exposing us to harms, and it's poisoning societies by undermining equality and democracy. You and I are not being treated as equals. We are being treated on the basis of our data, and we're paying different prices for the same products. We're being shown different opportunities, and that's not equality. So personal data shouldn't be the kind of thing that you can buy and sell. Even in the most capitalist societies, we agree that there are certain things that should be off the market, like votes and people and the results of sports matches. We should add personal data to that list.
There are instances where we give our data because we have to. We've made a purchase and we have to put in our data at some point in order to complete that purchase. And then the data is compromised because of some hack on a computer system to whom we've given our data. There's a brilliant website which I belong to, which is Have I Been Pwned, a PWNED. And it shows you and alerts you if any of your data has been compromised by a website around the world. And it's horrific, the actual numbers of websites that get hacked and people's data gets taken, basically.
It's terrible. And it's getting worse. And the more data out there on you, the more it's easy to aggregate it and to find out more about you. One of the most worrisome practices right now is to just collect as much data as possible and keep it for as long as possible. That's just a ticking bomb. Sooner or later, it's going to be either hacked or misused.
Yes,
absolutely.
And it's a very topical subject, this, because, of course, now with the coronavirus pandemic, we're being asked to hand over our data, basically, with track and trace systems and GPS tracking on our phones and sharing Bluetooth data. One can understand how that could be a problem in the future.
Yes, and it's a shame, because if we had regulated data properly, we wouldn't have the worries that are perfectly rational, and we could have, you know, trust our public institutions and public health, but we can't because we've been lied to again and again, and our data has been neglected. And so it was a really interesting show of power, this thing that happened with contact tracing apps and Google and Apple, because many governments wanted an app that was much less good from the point of view of privacy, and Google and Apple forced them to design much more privacy-friendly apps. And you can think, well, that's a great thing that, you know, these companies protected our privacy, and it is, but it shows that they have so much more power than government. Mm-hmm. And okay, so this time they were on the right side of history, but will they be on the right side of history next time when there's, you know, financial incentives or whatnot? And that should worry us.
Absolutely. Going forward then, as individuals, what can we do, Carissa? I know, for example, that, do you know, one of the best things I've ever come across was the virtual card one I use, and I don't mind saying who it is. It's called Revolut, and with Revolut you can have a virtual credit card which you can switch on, make a purchase, and then destroy virtually immediately afterwards. That kind of thing is got to be the way forward.
Yes, that's very, very helpful. There are many banks in Spain that also offer similar virtual cards, but you don't have to give your name, for instance. Cultivate a culture of privacy rather than a culture of exposure. So, you know, don't upload people's pictures online without asking for their consent. Whenever you get sent a video or a message that violates someone's privacy, don't pass it around. Choose privacy-friendly options like DuckDuckGo, like Signal. They're free. They're easy to use. You won't lose anything. Write to your political representatives. Tell them that you're worried about privacy. Ask them what they're doing. Write to companies and ask them to hand over your data and to delete the data and confirm they have deleted your data. Basically, try to use as many opportunities as you face to be privacy conscious. And turn off the Wi-Fi and Bluetooth of your phone when you go out, because otherwise companies will track you through that.
Yes, absolutely right. Or read your book, Privacy is Power, and that should be enough to scare you. And for goodness sake, stop taking Facebook quizzes to find out which horse you look most like. Carissa, it's been lovely to talk to you today. The book is Privacy is Power. Carissa Velez, thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Many thanks.
All the best.